Blessed Virgin Mary. Luke specifies that the angel was sent to Nazareth in Galilee, but that Mary subsequently rises in haste to travel to the hill country of Judea, where the house of Zechariah and her kinswoman Elizabeth are located. By the most direct route, Nazareth is about 150 kilometers from the hill country of Judea. On the average, moderners can walk about 5 kilometers in an hour, but not for long. So I would guess that given the standards of travel and the physical condition of a teenager accustomed to walking, the Blessed Virgin might possibly have made it to Elizabeth as quickly as 2 days of walking 15 hours a day, though that would be pretty strenuous. In any case, even double that length of time, 4 or 5 days, would constitute a reasonably hasty arrival and easily accord thus with the literal sense of the scriptural text. Now, if I remember my high school sex education correctly, the implantation of a fertilized human ovum called the concepus, that is, the conceived one, in the endometrium of the uterus usually takes place from 6 to 12 days after fertilization. So, there is really a good chance that depending upon the timeline that Luke means for us to imagine, the event recounted in today's gospel may well have taken place before endometrial implantation. In other words, when the infant in Elizabeth's womb leaps for joy at the presence of the Lord, there are no external signs of Mary's pregnancy. The very first human being to recognize the as yet unborn presence of the Lord in the world is himself an unborn child. The fetus, who will later be known as John the Baptist, perceives the presence of the incarnate Word precisely as a sign. Thus, the act of recognition is, of course, prophetic, but non-cognitive. The interpretive response of Elizabeth herself, however, is no less oracular, for she underscores the evident sense of the visitation by asking this question: how does this happen, that the mother of my Lord should come to me? Monday, as we were all traveling to Indianapolis, the Supreme Court released its decision in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby, and Justice Samuel Alito's majority opinion makes it clear that the High Court applied the standards of strict scrutiny to their decision. These standards, first established in the 1960s as the Sugar Test, are enshrined in federal statute by the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was signed into law by President Clinton. Those who oppose the Supreme Court's decision that the Health and Human Services mandate exceeded its scope by seeking to override the conscientious objection of individual employers whose religious beliefs prevent them from providing abortifacient drugs, sterilizations, and contraception include the White House and usual suspects, NARA, Planned Parenthood, and most of the Fourth Estate. Indeed, the response has been more than shield. It has been hysterical. They like to call people Somewhat, you may ask, was the yet-to-be-born John the Baptist doing, if not responding joyfully to the Concepus, that is, the conception, the presence of his Lord? According to the White House and other opponents of religious liberties, the fetal prophet was having precisely the kind of religious experience that one is supposed to have. A religious experience that is non-cognitive, and that happens in a secret, hidden, and dark place, in this instance, the womb of St. Elizabeth. My question